You know, every year over the last couple of years, I've been in Jaipur for a conference called WP Stream, right? It's where a lot of agencies, brands, platforms all kind of get together. And I end up meeting people who have not just interesting stories, but interesting job roles and journeys. And I think this year, one of the people I met who I thought had a very interesting perspective, because she kind of focused on, in one of the discussions we had over there, about the power of the camera, right, and what that could really enable, and what it, and how we don't really look at it in that sense. We just look at it like it's a small utility that we have, but the camera is such a vital part of our lives today. And this person I met was Tarika Soni from Snap. And the more I discussed that with her, and the more I discussed about the camera, about stuff that Snap is doing, and her perspective on the entire ecosystem and how this whole place has evolved, I thought it'd be interesting to kind of get that entire perspective on the show. Yeah, so that's what we're going to do on this episode. Tarika's in, and we're going to speak about Snap, about her journey in terms of how she's kind of gone through almost like a world tour before she's landed up where she has, and really talking about what privacy, the camera, and so many other things that are relevant to us today mean. All that and more on this episode of Advertising is Dead. I'm Varun Dugirala, co-founder and content chief of The Glitch, and we'll be right back with this. Welcome back to Advertising is Dead. We're with Tarika. Tarika, we finally managed to do this.
Yes, finally. I'm in India for a full month this time.
And let me first start off by thanking you and for the fact that one of the first connections I have had with my daughter has been the fact that I have used Snapchat filters over the last 2 years after Princess Anthony was 6 months old. In multiple ways. As soon as the camera could detect her face, I have used it to be a fun parent. It continues till as of yesterday night. So yes, first of all, thank you for that.
Did you achieve being fun?
I have achieved being fun. I have shown her how she look if she when she's old. Yeah. I have shown her how she will look when she's a boy. Not a good looking boy, but a very interesting old person. Dog faces have happened. Multiple dancing things have happened. We go through the archives, but also weirdly enough, because I'm in most of them with her, mm-hmm. I have had ponytails. I have had stuff coming out of multiple...
Puking rainbows.
Yeah. I'm like literally the number of things which I have... personas which I have, if those ever went out public, or rather which were not publicly seen and not privately shared, that would might be a little interesting to see how people would react to it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point you bring up, public versus private. Mm-hmm. And I think when I was growing up in college, obviously, you know, Facebook was growing. It was started by college students. Then came my mom and dad on Facebook. Ah. So I moved into Instagram. After a few years,
I don't open my Facebook parents, as much anymore.
Me too. So then came Instagram. Now my parents are on Instagram. Then came Snapchat, and now my dad's hooked. So will I leave Snapchat as a platform to engage? Not really, because of the biggest difference is everything is ephemeral in nature, right? Yeah. So it disappears, which is the fun factor. And then I personally do believe, and so does the company, is all the pictures that we take, hordes and hordes of pictures on your device's camera, a lot of them are irrelevant. And I genuinely believe that your life does not need to be public. And I think we learned that through my generation as well. When I was growing up in college, like, you have night outs and your parents are seeing when you checked in and out, which is unnecessary. So that's the reason why I think even with my parents on, they'll get the snap that I'm in the airport and taken a taxi. But after that, it's gone. So I'm not at my best. I'm on my wildest because I know it will disappear.
It's also interesting, right? Because privacy is an interesting conversation. Most times, and I have had many conversations with people on this, is the fact that sometimes I'm like, you know, I have a lot of friends who are on private profiles. And everyone's like, no, why does everybody have to see what I'm putting out, right? And more... There was a time when you put everything out there, like you said, but over time, I think across social platforms, we've all started putting like privacy settings, etc. It's only after I started this podcast did I say, okay, no private profile, I will put everything else out there. But there's still stuff, let's say on an Instagram, which I will share on with close friends. But inherently, what I feel we all worry about is the fact that what if I put something out there which I regret?
Exactly.
Tomorrow, next year, five years down the line.
Exactly. Completely agree. I think the fact, it makes the next generation after us understand that everything doesn't need to be publicly displayed. I think the privacy kicked in.
Yeah.
They want to have fun with social media, but not necessarily have their life displayed to X, Y, and Z and the 10th degree of separation that you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So that notion of platforms that are microphones to the world versus platforms that are genuinely just for communication within your closest friends, the mindset is different.
Yeah.
So you're not taking the best angle, my left side is better than my right, and, you know, beautifying yourself before posting anything.
True.
You're actually doing it in the moment. And the way I like putting this, which I'm a personal fan of, is it's less about how you look and more about how you feel.
True.
And that feel can be displayed through a snap and it must disappear. There's no reason for a feel picture to be on someone's cloud or somewhere on some platform for others to view. Like my feelings are not for display, right? So that's the difference that I see. It's less about face and more about feel.
Now, we met, what, a couple of weeks ago in Jaipur at Stream, and I think one of the first at LPP Stream, and one of the first interactions we had was when we were talking about the camera, right? And it was an interesting, it gave me perspective, because many times we look at every platform in buckets, and sometimes you don't realize that they actually belong in other
buckets.
And then you spoke about how the camera as a tool has so many, like, we don't really look at a camera the way we should, right? We still look at it from a very old school camera way, but if you look at what you can actually do with it today and the layers it has, and people say, oh, when is AR going to happen? I'm like, AR is here. It's happening. When is VR going to happen? Like, all these things, all enabled by a camera, right?
Yeah.
And I think the power of that is something which we don't give enough credit for. And I think that's why every cell phone company upgrades their cameras the most, right? That's the one thing which they all focus on.
Completely agree.
And just like, we live our lives on that camera.
Yeah, I agree. So it's really interesting what you're saying, right? Like, we spend a lot of time consuming video, but we spend even more time on the camera.
Yeah.
And I know that most of the world is focused on video because we've seen a transition from desktop to mobile. Let's go back, actually. TV to desktop, desktop to mobile.
Yeah.
Now, mobile from landscape to portrait mode, like all vertical, all full screen, all of that evolved with the industry, right?
Yeah.
But the camera also evolved in a very different fashion.
Yeah.
But interestingly, the way brands or media agencies or anyone thinks of it is TVC budgets going into video.
Yeah.
They're not looking at camera essentially as a way to communicate with the audience that they're after. Mm. And I think that's the uniqueness of the power of the camera, is when you're spending that much time on a camera, it does have to be very intimate in the way I'm talking to you, because my face is on it.
True.
So it's a lot of content creation that sits in my camera piece today versus the video, which is more consumption, not creation. So the fact that I also think the younger generation has learned to democratize content creation. And I also feel like they are a lot more courageous than I am or my generation has been in being comfortable and confident enough to have all the content that they produce for the external world to see.
True.
I think that's a really interesting mind shift. And when you're able to create organic, fun stuff through augmented reality, you want to share it with your friends, right? Yeah. Like, I have a Bitmoji dancing.
Yeah.
I want to, like, if I'm actually happy, that feeling of sending that snap is so different. And I'll send that to my dad and say, hey, I've landed. Is the first snap. The second is a Bitmoji dancing.
Yeah.
So the way I'm communicating is so expressive now than it ever has been. So I think that immersiveness is amazing.
So you just generally think when someone says, where are you?
Yeah.
The response is generally a photograph, right?
Correct.
And I've also do, when going back to the point you said about young people, the only segue point I have is the fact that I think old people suck at framing. It's just terrible framing. But I love the fact that, and this is me going back to what, this is no reference to anyone's parents, not mine. I would generally just say that older people put up a lot of stuff which young people would not put up because they don't know any better.
Yeah.
And I find that cute. Sorry.
So off late,
my out here enjoying myself.
Literally.
Like it's one of those photographs, right? So there's like no framing. It's like enjoying with family. Like, you know, you have like stuff like that. And I'm like, it's great. Like,
you know,
I think we're the worst generation, right? So they don't fear judgment.
Yeah.
Someone who's above a certain age.
Yeah.
Then there's the younger lot who also are putting it out. I think we are the problem.
You think?
We fear judgment.
So it's funny because my dad actually has a different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He says we listen to our parents and now we listen to our kids. We were the smash generation in the middle, you mm-hmm. know. But the interesting thing is now he's been using Bitmojis mm-hmm. and he has started doing, you know how you have WhatsApp groups
yeah.
that he wants to invite people for dinner. He'll have like a massive food fest as yeah. his sticker or his Bitmoji. Yeah. And he'll send it. And it's not about what time are we meeting? Where's the venue? Where's the dinner? Who's hosting? None of that. It's how did you get that sticker, man? It looks like you.
Yeah.
And everyone, his generation, he's touching 60 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So his generation is now like, can you teach me? I want it. It's amazing.
FOMO is super
it's great. And I think, you know, one of the sessions we did at Stream, right, is life starts at 50.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really interesting at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that's the audience that needs to talk to the younger audience in the way that the younger audience communicates.
Yeah.
And I think that shift will be gradual, but it'll happen like it happened with other platforms.
Yeah. I think when you look at all these pieces that we've just spoken about, which brings an interesting question, because many times when we're talking about Snapchat, the question always comes in, is it a social platform? Is it a camera app? Does it have... because it has multiple pieces in it, right? And there's a lot of innovations in it from an AI point of view, from a Bitmoji point of view. But how are you going to tie that whole piece together, especially when you're working with brands? And how do you kind of turn around and talk about it?
So, you're right. Snapchat stands for augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
We are definitely a camera company first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Snap Inc., as the entity, and then Snapchat, Bitmoji, etc. Entities under. I get this question a lot, is how are you placed in the ecosystem? And the way I think about us is a content creator platform. And what that means is any content that you produce can be flighted on any other digital platform. You'll also notice that we won't have a branding on any of the snaps that get taken. And I think that helps with democratizing augmented reality in a fashion that is so scalable versus actually having a brand there, having your own stamp there, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one way of looking at it. I would think the actual piece in the ecosystem that we are head on head with is the devices camera, a smartphone devices camera.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. I was actually talking to one of the influencers, one of the largest influencers, a Stream. You know how we had four or five that came for a panel? And all of them came to me and said, when our fans follow us and want to take a selfie, they might, by habit, take their device's camera to take a selfie. But then they'll say, no, 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 one second. They'll flip into Snapchat and then take the selfie.
Yeah.
So when they're taking that selfie, it's still on Snapchat. Which is the interesting thing is we have way too many snaps that get taken on Snapchat than even the device's camera. So that's one. The second thing I would say, I think when you're thinking of how you're using the camera on a daily basis, when you get used to it, when you start getting used to not just creating content, but having fun with the camera, you kind of don't want to leave that space, is what I've noticed. And that means from... my camera should be able to do a math problem by just pointing at it. This coffee cup should just point the camera and tell me where to buy it, tell me everything about it. I should be able to get my favorite sports score. I should be able to point the camera to the sky. It'll tell me the pollution level. It'll tell me weather. So it's literally an ecosystem that's built inside the camera, right? So the sophistication that comes with it is pretty heavy. Now, how do brands think of that? The way and a lot of the brands that we work with look at it as a content creator platform, because they can still use the content that's produced on Snap across anywhere that they feel like.
Yeah.
Which is the fun part, is you know, you're able to use that content in a fun way anywhere.
Yeah.
We are also looking at joining the offline with the online piece, which is the other piece of how I envision the world to look in the future. I feel like with Pokemon Go, it was a really good example.
Yeah.
We've done some really interesting work with landmarkers, where we point the camera to the landmarker and any of the historic monuments would come to life. That's a very different way of having an ad placement on a monument.
Yeah.
Right? And then I think QR codes, especially in India, have picked up insanely.
Because there was a time when QR codes were one of those things, oh my God, like no more QR codes. Is it relevant anymore? But it's popped back again.
It's popped back. So that's another piece, right? Like imagine a Bollywood poster on your way to the airport. And it has, if it has a QR code, you can point your camera to it and
it comes to life.
It comes to life.
Yeah.
You'll see the tear in the poster and it'll come to life and start dancing with you.
A photo poster, Nikla Hero.
Correct. Exactly, right? So we did something interesting like this with a lot of the studios. And the way they're communicating about their trailers, even before you go for that movie, is insane. And that's the offline piece. So yes, you're referring to the brands that are online using Snapchat and using the camera in a different way to talk to their audience. But I'm also trying to grow the offline with the online piece, which I think is really, really interesting in the way we're heading. I will also say, when it comes to augmented reality or a tech disruptor, it depends on the brand. If they want to be positioned as the first of its kind or the risk taker or the tech platform, I think that's where they think of Snapchat, which is the which is exactly why I joined, is the technology of the sophistication we built around the camera is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
You know, you just mentioned why you joined, right? And I think this is, if you kind of flash back on this, did you always want to work in this space? Do you always want to work in the technology space? Because was that always the thing?
That was always the thing. I, in fact, interestingly, skipped the desktop era and went straight into mobile. I don't know how that happened. I kind of knew. I can probably walk you through. This is a funny example. I remember walking around a conference in London, helping a friend of mine who couldn't make it to the conference. And I said, you know, okay, I'll do it for you. But I have never been exposed to this industry for ever.
Yeah.
So I'm walking around taking people's cards, like networking. And a lot of them, with their British accents, are telling me, oh my God, this is programmatic, whatever. I'm sitting there and going, why do they keep calling it problematic? I don't understand what problematic is, you know, because I'm not at all from the industry.
Yeah.
But then I realized when I'd done that as a favor, what it meant to be in the mobile space. So I essentially went from FMCG straight into mobile, knowing that the device is going to be powerful enough in a decade.
Yeah.
Where it'll make 10, 12 other devices absolutely redundant.
True.
Like the Kodak story.
Ah.
Right? So I felt like that would happen. And even now, if you ask me, besides work, I don't know when else I open my laptop.
I work on an iPad. My laptop. My laptop's around generally for like some things. An Excel sheet.
Yeah,
Microsoft's getting better at that, but generally one of the few times I have it open, I leave my laptop in my drawer in my office. I don't take it around with me. But getting back to what you were saying, how you jumped from FMCG, like you said, to mobile. But how did you kind of like grew up in Delhi?
No, I'm from Pathankot.
Ah,
yeah.
I'm saying this because my LinkedIn stalking has been a failure because you said LSR. I made an assumption, even though I should not make assumptions.
Yes, so I was in LSR for just a few months, 3 to 4 months. I'll back up actually. I started off 7 to 17 years of my life. I was in Mayo Girls.
What are you saying? My sister went to Mayo Girls.
Really?
Yeah.
So I'm a boarding school girl. My entire gen, my 3 tiers above me, from my grandfather to my father to my brother to me, it was destined that we're going to go to a boarding school.
Yeah.
Because we were from Pathankot. So it was like, I would come back with really messed up pronunciations and my dad would get really mad. So it was time for both me and my brother to get shipped to boarding school. So
were you in a batch, and this is doing it live, which came to Bishop Cotton Boys in Bangalore?
Yes.
For their fest.
Yes.
Guess who was in Bishop Cotton Boys at that
no.
point of time?
No.
Me.
That's amazing.
As soon as you said Mayo Girls, yeah. I was like, 1 second.
Yes, we did. We do these cultural fests. Yeah.
Yes, you guys came there and you lived in this dorm. And there was a tennis court. And on the other side of the tennis court was another dorm.
Yes.
And because it was a boys' school you came
there
to,
you
guess what all of us boys were doing?
We were on lasering? The
other, lasering,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not handle that laser. Yeah. I would never do such things.
Yeah.
But
of course
yes.
you don't.
Jam.
So that was
like... this is like... Okay, this was not planned.
Yeah.
This happened on this podcast. This is happened live. Not live recording, but...
That's
yes,
amazing.
Yes.
So to your point, I did Mayo Girls.
And I know, and I also say that I know all of you all are pissed off. And I'm just letting everybody know that officially, Mayo Girls should have won the fest.
Yes.
But there was some slimy stuff that was pulled in hindsight, because of which Bishop Cotton Boys won.
Won, of course.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
I will admit this because I don't care anymore.
That
so I'm like,
is
it's fine.
Hilarious yes. that you're saying that. So, yes. So we did, I did Mayo Girls. And then I went to LSR and I realized that my jing bang of Mayo was LSR. It's like a path that we choose from Mayo to LSR, LSR to LSE. It was already pre-planned to a large degree. And that's when I took a step back and thought about it and said, I wanted to do an exchange. I went abroad for a year. And I went to, this is a fun story, I went to Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas
right.
in my first year. And then I decided that I didn't want to go back. One key factor, driving factor for me was I was in an all-girls school, and I didn't want to turn out to be a nun. So I didn't want to do more of all-girls. I decided I need
I've
to
never
think
understood,
about my life.
You know, I was always in a co-ed school.
Yeah.
Till I went to Bishop Cotton Boys. Yeah. And although being in a one gender school at that time felt like weirdly, it was weirdly fun. But in hindsight, it's a terrible idea, right? You are not teaching young people how to socialize. You are telling them that there is a wall.
And you're telling them to
between
be extremely
between boys'
awkward.
School and girls' school.
Yeah.
And so at night, which I did not do, I will not admit to these things. This is all fictional stories that I did not jump over a gate and then jump over another gate and get caught.
So,
in the wrong gender
this,
school.
This resonates a lot because when I was in Mayo, I was a squash player. So I played for my school, a little bit of my country. Like it was a lot. Like I had scaled up quite a lot.
Yeah.
We didn't have squash courts in Mayo in the girls' campus.
So you had to go to boys' school.
So we had to go to boys' school, and hence the laser story. So it was the bane of our lives to go and make that 20-minute trek to go and play squash.
Oh, that's how far the school. Oh, I don't know how far the boys.
It's right opposite. It's literally right opposite.
Yeah.
So that was the reason why I had to think about moving from not just it wasn't to do with LSR. It had more to do with me stepping out and thinking about what I wanted. And I wanted the exposure, so I left for a year, decided not to come back, did both the coasts, east and west, and then moved back to India for about a year. So now what am I supposed to do after 5.5 years there, right? So, and typical story, visa ran out. International business.
Ah.
How funny is that? At least I'm using my skill
It worked
now.
Out eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I moved into... ISB is what I was thinking about doing in the time that I was thinking, I just come back, what do I do? My husband ends up being from ISB, so I got introduced to him on an induction session, and he brainwashed me not to join ISB because I was too young and the average age was significantly older with more experience, and I didn't end up doing an MBA, and I married him instead.
Okay.
So that's how it worked out. And
it's
then,
a very smart strategy.
Right?
Don't join my college, marry me instead.
He still admits to it. He's like, you wanted the network? I'll give you the network. You know? I don't regret it,
Do
though.
Not try this at home. Please. This is not like pickup lines that you can try in orientation.
So I did that. He had shipped himself to London already, so I followed.
Okay.
So I've been there for about 7.5 years now.
And that's when you joined. Then you were at Twitter.
Yeah.
For
so
a while.
I moved from a few startups that got acquired by Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Moved into Twitter. Did about 5 years at Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Within Twitter, I moved quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
They'd done a lot of acquisitions, and I moved from understanding the demand side into the supply side, which was a black box for me in the first 3 years at Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that me joining Mopub would be an interesting mindset change again,
mm-hmm.
where you understand half the business, which is demand,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't understand much about supply.
Yeah.
So I moved into the supply side, which is Mopub.
So explain Mopub and what it
So Mopub is the largest, one of the largest inventory sources for in-app.
Okay.
Globally.
Mm-hmm. So it knows the in-app advertising. Yeah.
Correct. So they hold a lot of the global supply for in-app, mm-hmm. which is brilliant. They have a beautiful product. And I moved into the product side as a product growth manager after learning supply, which was the last piece missing.
It kind of helps you put two pieces together, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you understand supply demand, and then the joining point was just product. So I moved into the product side, and then I again got to a point where I wanted to explore other opportunities. And Snap happened. So that was the journey of Mayo to London.
I'm not getting over this fact that we were in the same
batch
school festival at the same
That's
time.
That's crazy.
But this is bizarre.
Yeah.
I keep bumping into people from Mayo, and it's very interesting how that happened. But I will not digress that far into that now. You know, there are a bunch of things I really want to ask you, but I do know we need to go for a break. So we're going to do that and be right back with Advertising is Dead. Welcome back to Advertising is Dead. We're still with Tarika. You know, what's when you speak about supply and demand, right? And it brings up an interesting point, which, and also the how you looked at your own educational journey.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who listen to this podcast actually are either in college, trying to figure things out, trying to say, I will go out with a very clear picture of what I want to do in life.
Yeah.
And most times they worry about, I'm not entirely sure what I want to
Correct.
Do. My response has always been, you will never be sure. And you just need to wing it till you figure something you like. And then you might just realize that after a couple of years, you might want to try something else,
mm-hmm.
right? But you'll figure out what you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you looked at it across this entire time?
So when I was in USC, I actually started off with psychology. Actually, at LSR, I was doing psychology honors first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved into literature.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved into business because I'm from a business family.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that did come naturally to me, mm-hmm. was moving into business. Was I'd grown up in an environment where my dad's an entrepreneur, my granddad's an entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
now my brother is.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that all three of them on a dinner table would only talk about business, I didn't have much of a choice for it to flow into my bones. That's why I decided to do international business. I didn't, to be honest, like any college student, I don't think we ever figure it out.
Yeah.
It just happens. It happens in a fashion where the more you start working, the more you realize what you dislike and like.
Yeah.
I had learned through the first company that I worked in AdTech, which was called Tap Commerce.
Yeah.
They were a disruptor in terms of retargeting in-app. There was no concept of retargeting an app.
Yeah.
It was a desktop phenomenon.
Yeah.
So when I learned from there what a deep link meant and kind of realized how interesting it is to engage with the audience in a digital mobile first fashion.
Yeah.
And that to like not just talking to them from the awareness install funnel, but all the way down to making first, second, 10th purchases.
Yeah.
So those buckets was something that really excited me. I was like, oh my God, we can actually do this. Like we can carve out a bucket that has made the first purchase and then carve out another bucket of 10th purchase and then talk to these audience of buckets in a very different way.
Yeah, because also the audience evolves over purchases, right? Yeah. As you're buying stuff, your relationship with how you're buying a certain product or a certain thing changes.
Absolutely. And I see that even with augmented reality here, the brands that have worked with us constantly on, their sophistication level keeps growing in what they expect the camera to do.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the ones who are trying us for the first time, they cut slack.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, a natural human behavior, right?
Yeah.
I guess from a college standpoint, you just learn on the job.
Yeah.
There's no other way to do it. And you kind of pick up on things that really excite you versus not.
Yeah.
So I took all my decisions from a career standpoint based on this moment. What is it that I'm missing?
Yeah.
Like, I knew enough about demand and I had successfully achieved where I needed to be on the demand side to now flip the coin, because without demand there's no supply and without supply there's no demand. So I do face this with a lot of companies that they treat supply and demand separately, and I don't look at it that way. I literally look at it as a coin.
It's disconnected. Correct. If you're not working together,
right? So it's like a coin. It's the same coin. It's front versus back.
Yeah.
It's two faces to the same thing.
Yeah.
And the coin itself is the product.
Yeah.
So when I'd done the 360, I realized I'm not an ops person. I am so disorganized. If you see my notes, ridiculous. I have my dad's habit, which I always blame him for, is I'll take notes on newspaper, I'll scribble. I still write a lot of my notes.
Yeah.
I'm not very digital when it comes to, because my memory functions in a fashion where till I don't write it, I won't remember it. And I'll destroy it, but now it's gone into my head because I've written it.
Yeah.
So I still am a mess. So I knew ops is not my thing. I had done the media side enough where I needed to pivot to product more out of curiosity than anything else. So I think I, like I said, right, like you learn on the job, and I knew that there was a gap in convincing an advertiser why my programmatic stack works in a certain fashion without understanding what the auction is doing at the back. How is the waterfall set up? Why is it set up in a certain fashion? What is a waterfall? So the
what
ranking, it's literally a ranking system of multiple bids coming in real time in an auction. It's literally like a stock market auction. And bunch of demand is bidding in certain CPMs to capitalize on a certain supply. And then the publishers are ranked based on how premier or non-premier they are. And then we fill the slots based on the highest bid at a second price. That's majority of how the industry works. So it was, I didn't know this when you're on the supply or the demand side.
Correct.
You only understand the pipes when you're on the product side. So I moved into product for that. And then I kind of wanted the next role to be self-encompassing of all three things. Because it was not going to be ops. So it became, I should grow a region. Or I should look at it in a very strategic fashion where I understand enough about supply, demand, and product to utilize my skill set and grow the market in a certain fashion.
What's also interesting with what your role now is, and because I think what every conversation we've had, we've gone on to multiple tangents of things which we've discussed, and I think that's really important, right? Because it gives you almost an overarching thought process because of the multiple things that you've done across your career. But also then kind of gives you, brings you to a point where, okay, you know why, how certain things can work in certain markets, how it can work for brands, for agencies, for, you know, for consumers. And I think the core problem many times, especially the advertising and marketing industry faces, is the problem that everyone's working from their own perspective, or rather their own silo. And like, many times you stop thinking like a consumer, right? What will work? What work for a brand might not necessarily work for a consumer. Or rather, what might work for a consumer might not necessarily work for the platform, or not necessarily, maybe the brand, right? And in some way, the platform's kind of balancing both these pieces together. Is that a struggle? Especially because for me, Snap's a very evolved platform in a good way, because it's kind of pushing us towards things which people have told us were science fiction, right? The first time I experienced proper AR was on Snap, and for me that was the interesting part, and I've consistently gone back to it for that experience and how to kind of keep using that. But is it a struggle many times to kind of balance that out?
It's a really good question, Varun. I deal with this probably in my day-to-day every day. There are a certain level, and it's probably more country-driven or region-driven than a global phenomena, where, you know, certain people that hold the budgets or carry the weight of where they want to invest in terms of their brand dollars and where, how and where they want to engage, they are not necessarily my target audience, which means they're not a user, right? So for them, it's a challenge for me to walk into a meeting when we are here for a sophisticated ad format, which will engage you in a certain fashion and share all the matrix and playtime and compare that to all other platforms that they work with and all of that. But that is like, you know, 301 in terms of education. So as soon as I say, do you use Snapchat? I face the first thing that comes up is they're not my core audience. And a lot of that requires 101 education, not 301 education. Because the other interesting thing is, which is the fun fact, is when I convert a traditional mindset, or maybe not the right word to use, traditional, just an older mindset, or what you were saying earlier, right? Like the older people don't know how to frame. So when they're not used to having, like, I'll be honest, like my father hates me sending pictures from my holidays where it's a, you know, I don't know, it's a drink or it's a beach, but it has no humans in it. Because he doesn't understand.
Like, why are you
taking this picture? You know, I want to see your face on it. That's the difference that, so it's similar analogy, right? Like where the way the ecosystem has evolved, their style of communication is so fluid, which is really hard for an already set mindset, like an older generation, to adapt to and say, oh, interesting. This is what you call communication through emojis. So that's the difference in how we've evolved from, you know, written calligraphy into talking with pictures.
Like I tweeted something yesterday because I use Microsoft Office so much because of work, is, and there's this new app, and I tweeted and I use the emoji of mind blown. And I got responses saying, can you explain this to someone who doesn't understand what this emoji means, right? Which is exactly what you're talking about, right? But I appreciate the fact that question was asked. The problem actually, which I find, is when the question, when the question is not asked, and then people either assume what they know everything, and they just want to do what they've done everywhere else and just copy paste it onto every single place they can copy paste things onto, or the fact that they just don't necessarily want to understand, which is the worst one, right?
Like,
no, I will tell you about Snap.
So I'll be honest, like you were saying, right? Like, what's the challenge that I face? One is just getting them warm to the idea of communicating in a different fashion. That's the first thing. The second thing is, what I love about it is when you convert an ardent person who has a rigid way of thinking into a converted person that now understands the beauty of communicating like this, right? So that is what I thrive on, to be honest. I love that. I'm also like seeing this change in like even an older generation, like my grandmother now is using emojis. Earlier she was sending, you know, the extreme hysterical laughter as crying faces because she didn't know what that meant, the emoji. And I kept thinking, when her grandkids come, that's why she types perfectly. But that's not true. I actually physically, last weekend I was home and I physically saw her typing and I was so impressed. I'm not kidding. I sat there and went, oh my God, I always assumed one of you, one of my cousins, is helping her type. No, she's doing it herself. It's brilliant. And the way she talks to us now, like I said, the older has to learn to talk to a younger.
Because they have time to learn.
Yeah.
I bought my grandmom VR goggles.
Wow.
She's loving it. She's trying to take
so
them off.
Fun.
She's 87.
And
she's sitting in a living room. It's my birthday gift to her. Because she loved to travel, and for her, she would go to places because she wanted to see, like she would go watch a movie because for her, how many locations has it been shot in, so she gets to see how those places are. But she loved to travel, but the thing is that she started traveling a little later in life. Now she's getting older, and so she can't travel as much. And so me and my mom were just talking about what we should get her for her birthday, and I said, let's get her VR goggles, and she said, let's do that, and we bought it. She just needs someone to set it up for her. And now she's like on it, right? My mom's a little worried that she's on it a little too much. But I it brings an interesting point. It's about the mindset and not necessarily the age.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody who's really young as well might just say, oh, I don't want.
Correct.
Right,
the curiosity is what we're driving off of, right? Yeah, and that's the fun. And without a challenge, there's no fun.
Yeah.
You kind of get bored of what you're doing otherwise. Yeah. So I think that challenge is what keeps me awake at night. Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. Has it been interesting though working with some brands? Because I know that you guys have done some campaigns with a bunch of brands.
Yeah.
And how have those kind of gone?
Yeah. So what I love about it, about working with brands in India especially, is...
You don't try stuff.
They...
Are intrigued.
They're intrigued because it's so new, augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
I love that they have the risk appetite.
Mm-hmm.
I also love that it makes them look good. What I mean by that is, if you're a streaming app, and if I've placed you on the Landmark in Mumbai, for we did this with Spotify, for example, for Diwali, where they rolled out their Diwali campaign. And if you think of, I respect Spotify for one, taking the risk with us for the first time.
Yeah.
Two, they themselves are an innovator.
Yeah.
So it's interesting for two innovative companies to partner up to produce something amazing.
Yeah.
What I genuinely like about the production quality that we produce for campaigns is it's driving towards what they really want to achieve. Like even now when I walk around in India, people didn't know what we did for Diwali. They won't know it's necessarily us. They'll know it was done, which is how it should be.
Yeah.
If we are partnering up with a brand, it shouldn't matter that it's coming from me. It should matter that the actual message was delivered, which is what I really care about.
So for someone who hasn't seen the campaign, what was it?
It was a Spotify campaign that got the Landmarker to dance on the Diwali playlist beats.
Ah, nice.
So you would go close enough to the Landmarker in a certain radius, and you would point the camera, and it would bring the Gateway of India to life.
Yeah.
And it would literally start dancing to their demand. It's amazing. It was so fun.
That's the fun part about right? And the word you use is bringing something to life. That's the true this thing.
Yeah.
Right? It's adding that. It's, how to put it? It's magic.
It is. And that's what I love, like, with all the pictures that you showed me on your camera roll.
Yes.
I realized we were laughing through it all.
Yeah.
Which is what I love.
There's
right?
a giggle like, that comes out. Right? You're like a child. Every
it's
time you
the
see.
Fun that comes without some, it.
One of those filter, any air filter on yourself, you have that instant childish giggle.
Yeah.
Like when, the old person filter, right?
Yeah.
Everybody has checked that to see how they will look old. I look like my uncle. But
and what about the gender swap? Have you done that?
I'm a very pretty looking girl.
Yeah.
It turns out I would have made a very pretty girl. So, but some people just like, I think it's actually the guys as girls has always been a better one.
Than the girls as guys.
Also shows that generally guys aren't the better looking gender. Let's just be honest. You do not want to turn guys.
I don't know about that. The quality of feedback I got is A, don't show it to your husbands and your spouses.
Yeah.
When you're a girl, especially, it scars them.
Yeah.
And things can't be undone once they're seen. So I thought the lenses you're referring to were all super fun.
Yeah.
To your point, I think the fun element is what we thrive on. The concept has always been there should be an element of creativity at sheer scale where it doesn't feel like it's a tech augmented reality attached to it. I think if you ask a Snapchatter anywhere in the world, you know, you play with augmented reality like 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
And they won't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They'll just say, yeah, we play with it. But they don't necessarily know the technical term is augmented reality.
Yeah.
It's their DNA.
Yeah.
So it's so second skin. That's the fun fact of it is it's just the way it is. Like they're so comfortable with it. So this is a really interesting one that we recently had a conference where we asked the Gen Zs and millennials how they look at all the multiple social platforms that they use or they work with. And we said, hey, the question to you is, if you had to bring your four social platforms to dinner, how would they all appear? Give it a personality, right? And one of them actually, this is the age group was Gen Zs. And it was really interesting to hear their feedback, right, on how they treat each platform. And one of them said, I would be perfectly dressed.
Hmm.
My perfect shirt.
Hmm.
I might be fashionably late.
Hmm.
And that's how I would appear for dinner.
Hmm.
The second one says, as a second platform, I'd be old. I'd be intellectual.
Hmm.
I'd be crisply dressed.
Hmm.
And I'd be well-rounded in terms of my knowledge base. Hmm. That's the second one.
Yeah.
The third one was, I don't even know what you're talking about because you've never used it. And then came, okay, how do you think of Snapchat? And they said, you would roll out of bed and it would be just fine. So I think that was an interesting way of how they think of engaging with different platforms.
Yeah.
Is where their best and their raw and their organic sits. And and it's interesting to hear more and more that I hear a lot of influencers that maintain two accounts.
Yeah.
I have no comments on that because we don't know who you are then. We know this side of you versus that side of you.
Yeah.
And then it brings the whole privacy piece again. Like how much of it do you want public versus not?
That's the thing that I think being authentic in today's day and age is so crucial. Not as individuals, as brands, as everything. Because if you're trying to be someone else, the internet calls it out. I think people see it. I don't think it's like there are so many. And which is why this is the term influencer for me is a very tricky word.
Yeah.
Right? I've for the longest time said I don't like that term because although it's there's no word which can actually encompass what an influencer is rather than an influencer. But I think that the problem also becomes the fact that when you're trying to fake it, you're trying to fake to kind of get influence, but you will never be able to fake it long enough to keep that influence.
That's a good point. Now, think of like the mental health that goes behind it, right?
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is, and you're touching that nerve right now, what you just said, is it a competition with how many likes you get?
Yeah.
And that means your content has to be so crisp when it's out that you're kind of competing with your own ego to a large degree.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily agree with that. I feel like you're not being authentic and I don't know the real you if it is so curated to the T, right?
Yeah.
And then it does add pressure, especially to the younger generations when they're the most vulnerable in that age.
Mm.
And that's the added pressure that we do not stand for.
Because Gen Z onwards are the first generation who had almost the internet from a social angle from literally the time they were born, right? And Gen Alpha, I think, is the term right after Gen Z. And for them, it's even going to be more.
Mm-hmm.
So privacy is a tricky one, right? We've gone from saying, I don't want to share everything about my life, to saying it's fine to share everything about my life, to now again being like, one second, do I really want everything about my life out there? And it is it's a conversation that can go on.
So think of it in a very physical world, right? Like forget the virtual for a second. If you and me, or me and a girlfriend of mine, is having a bathroom conversation, does that need to be public?
No.
Exactly. So I feel like communication has evolved in a fashion where I don't agree that everything that comes to your mind needs to be public.
Yeah.
So that's the interesting shift that the younger generation understands and respects.
Yeah.
We didn't know that when we were growing up.
Yeah.
We thought it was cool to have everything on until you realize you've damaged it. Because I've had episodes with my friends globally whose, you know, profiles on social are checked before they get hired.
Hmm.
And that's not a pretty sight.
True.
And that's your private life. And I don't feel like that needs to be exposed to your bosses.
Yeah.
So I think that's when my generation realized everything does not need to be public because it backfires.
Yeah. I think also really worried about not just like, I think the repercussions for, so there's a, okay, let me figure the right way to put it. So for instance, we put a bunch of stuff about my daughter out there on social, right? The question many times has been is that she hasn't chosen to be on social media. Yes, parents have decided to put images of her, videos of her. So while initially when she was born, we would share a lot. slowly over time, I think also there's a standard desi logic of nazar lag jayegi. So that goes down automatically. And then every week, nazar goes off. Like literally there is like, I recently posted a video of her because she and I were out in the play area in our building. And she said, Papa, put your phone away. And I was recording her. I said, I'm recording you. She's like, no, put your phone away. She walked off saying, wasting time.
Wow.
With full strut walk away. And then I posted it. And then suddenly I realized I had 2,000 views and shared 200 times.
Wow.
And I was like, should I put that out publicly? Yeah. Should I not? No, it's out there. I can't do anything about it. I can delete it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it's already done. Like, it's so... Those are times when you kind of think about it. Like, I very initially, the filter ones, when she was a baby on a rocker, did not know this. The first time a camera could detect her face to do AR filters on her, I did it when it was 3-4 months old. Yeah. She had no control over it. I used to put those out.
Yeah.
I've had her as, she's literally in a dance piece. She's had, like, all kinds of things on her face before she could even realize something like that existed. But over time, sometimes now I hold back many times. Every time I post something, especially with her, I'm thinking, okay, one second. Some things are fine. Some things maybe aren't. So sporadically.
Yeah.
And that's the... Because this is a generation who actually have stuff about them out on social media before they could even decide if they want to be on it.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting point. But I would still imagine, and check me if I'm wrong, because you're a parent. Mm. I'm not. Most of the goofiness that you're doing is... with you in it.
Yeah, either my voice or I'm around. Or,
Right. So I think that's one factor. The second factor is the beauty of stories.
Yeah.
Where the content is so fluid.
Yeah.
That the fear of should I have not, you know, it will disappear in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So I think that makes you a lot more confident and comfortable in having a voice on a platform where you don't get trolled. There's no ego gloating.
Yeah.
It will disappear even if you don't like it or your best side wasn't on it.
True.
Because it will go away. Yeah. So I think that is quite a shift in general in terms of Gen Z's on the fluidity of content and how quickly it moves. Imagine creating content all day and it disappears.
Yeah.
I question that sometimes.
But makes us more authentic.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Because it's... And the way I think about it, right? Like we're trying to resonate the digital platforms to be as real time as it possibly can be. Mm-hmm. Like when I take a picture and I snap it to any of my friends, I don't have to tell them that I've landed and I am in a cab on my way this time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to type any of that. I just take a picture and I post capture filter on it and it'll tell me the time, where I am, and I send it.
Mm.
So that real time environment cannot be faked.
True.
Right? Like, it's not a picture that I took a week ago because there's no way to do that. It's very real. And I think that's what I love about the fluidity of the content is my life is moving per hour, which is fluid in itself.
Yeah.
Nothing is constant. Yeah. And nor should your content be, because that is what keeps the authenticity of, I was eating dinner and now I'm going for a workout. And that's not the same thing. My mind has shifted and hence my feelings have shifted and hence the content has shifted.
I think that shifting is actually the most important part because it then feels like, I think the fear of being judged in the long term kind of goes away, right? And in speaking of shifting, we'll shift to this last part of every podcast that we do, which is called The Humans of Advertising, which is our version of trying to not talk about the work as much, but to ask you really random questions.
Okay.
What do you consume that people who know you would be surprised that you actually consume? What interests you? People wouldn't think that would generally interest you.
So I'd say the other way around. I have never watched Game of Thrones.
What?
Can you imagine? Exactly. I get that reaction a lot. I think that would be one of those surprises that I have not done. And I think on the flip side, I read a lot of fact over fiction books. I guzzle them with my travel especially. I think that's surprising to a lot is, you know, you would imagine when you're working 24/7 and you're getting this time up in the air when you're disconnected, you should probably have a playful book.
Yeah.
If I'm investing that kind of time, I kind of need to learn
something from it. I cannot do fiction. Cannot do fiction.
Nice. Listen. My husband's totally the opposite.
Non-fiction.
He only does fiction.
Always.
Yeah.
The only fiction I consume now is fiction podcasts.
Yeah, so I think that those might be the two surprises.
What can you whip up in an instant?
a good batch of chicken biryani.
Amazing. That is like best response ever.
Yeah.
It's biryani is my, so you know that question which actually I'll ask you. If you could have, and I'm guessing this it's the answer, is that whenever someone's asked me if you could have one last meal, world's gonna end, what would you have? I would say biryani.
I think my husband would probably say that.
Yeah.
I would probably say biryani. I would say, it sounds really lame, but dal chawal.
Also, I get it.
Yeah, soul food.
If you add achar to it, then I would say
I agree. Like soul food. Especially, you know, when you're on the road a lot.
I like to talk about food, and hunger just comes. Yeah, saliva comes in the throat.
And you know, I realize like the more I hop planes and travel and, you know, trotting.
Yeah, you want to come back and have
dal chawal. I need that soul food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dal chawal, always.
Yeah.
Do you listen to a lot of podcasts?
Not as much as I would like to.
Any you listen to which you've enjoyed?
Yeah, I've listened to a few. One very recent one that I've done on Spotify's podcast, actually, was, this is going to sound crazy, but it was literally about Snapchat starting out back in the day and comparing that to the likes of Twitter or Facebook. Just the story of how all three began.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a really good one. I'm quite a TED Talk fan, to be honest with you. So one of the funniest ones I've seen recently, which is on my way here, was the entire TED Talk was about a sloth.
What?
Yeah, it was about sloths. And it was really interesting how they've evolved into being super slow humans and how we should learn from them and descale our lives a little bit. It was crazy. But yeah, those are the two recent ones that I've done.
What are the recent books that you consumed?
Oh, yeah. So factual, I usually try and do, yeah, it's all nonfiction. So what I'm reading right now is Atomic Habits. This was my February read. Atomic Habits by James Clear. And it's really interesting on how it talks about how your mind, when it builds a habit, can never be erased out of your system. Once it builds, you have to kind of pause or change your environment to break the habit, but you can't erase a habit. It's really interesting. And it talks about like habit stacking and how to pull good versus bad habits. And it's brilliant. It's a good read.
And why will advertising not die?
Because we always need to create new needs for humanity. I love this example. For donkeys of years, we've never had the need for teeth whitening. I mean, it just kind of happened, right? So we like, that's the curiosity that you build and produce a need in humans that actually innately might not exist, which is the fascinating part. So I don't think advertising will die.
Perfect. That's a great way to end this episode. I'm thinking, dreaming of dal chawal or biryani right now. So I think that is what the remnant of this is going to be. Thank you so much for doing this.
No worries. Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of Advertising is Dead.